And welcome into the Monday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Monday morning. Hope everybody had a great weekend, or if you're still on your weekend, are continuing to have a great weekend. Welcome into the program with us. Rex Road, how are we doing? What's going on?
We're doing well, yes. Hopefully, you know, everybody has awakened, even though they could be sleeping in, and is listening and watching. Yeah.
Even if you got the day off, an opportunity to wake up early and listen to the Robbie and Rex Road program, oftentimes too good to pass up. And we're glad that people do that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can't imagine not wanting to see these faces right now on this holiday Monday.
I do have some news to report immediately as we begin the show.
Okay.
You know, I gave our listeners a homework assignment over the weekend, and a couple different people came through. Troy on Twitter was the first one. I got a DM from this yesterday. History still alive in Y5 at Neyland. Nice little horse trough in here. Good stuff. So people took my homework assignment seriously. They went to Neyland Stadium, and they found some still functional horse troughs in the bathroom.
Okay.
Good to know.
Okay, so we still have some troughing going on.
Yeah, thank goodness. Still some troughing going on out there.
I wonder if like the lines were huge for those bathrooms. Like,
people taking photos. Hope not.
Fly is open. Let's
happening?
Go pee.
Right. There you go.
So I know people were probably just burning up to figure that out over the weekend, and I thought I'd lead off today by letting everyone know there's still some horse troughs in Neyland Stadium.
Thank goodness. Danny White, don't you touch them. Hands off, Danny.
An administration that doesn't care about its history.
This is your chance, Danny, to prove that you belong in Knoxville.
Beautiful stuff.
Leave the troughs alone.
Keyser, how we doing? What's going on?
Doing well. Can't complain. I saw that someone tweeted at Danny White and said, we got to move this. I think it was a picture of the sun.
I did see that. Yes.
Yeah. But we also, Chris and I, planned our first trip to go to Knoxville. So we'll be going up there next couple weeks. Yeah. They're playing Kent State, so nothing special. But still, that's the best time for us to go.
Is that the game after NC State?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, nice.
Game after NC State before Oklahoma. Trap game, maybe? Who knows? We'll see.
Well, Maxion can get you sometimes.
Maybe. I'll see Oklahoma down in Auburn later this month, too.
Wow.
Okay. Just
traveling man out there. Well, a lot of college football.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Nice.
Big opening weekend of college football. We're going to get to all of that today on the show. A lot of college football in your reaction to week one across the SEC. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We got to start with Vandy, though. I mean, Vandy with a statement win to begin the season, 34-27 in overtime against the Virginia Tech Hokies. Now, we heard all the talk coming into the game, and there were a couple people picking Virginia Tech to make the college football playoff and be kind of a dark horse team coming out of the ACC. Vanderbilt didn't know what to expect. I said this Friday when we were in Pigskin Pick'em, I was like, there's a lot of change, and that could be good, and that could be bad. Well, so far, pretty good. Diego Pavia, 12 of 16, 190 yards through the air, two touchdowns. He also carried the ball 26 times at the quarterback position, 104 yards on the ground and a touchdown there. And, it felt like from the jump, the attitude of that team was just a little bit different than what we've seen the last couple of years. Now, I did wonder, because you know, they were up basically the whole game, and then in the fourth quarter, Virginia Tech came rolling down a little bit, scored the touchdown, took the lead, and I was like, oh, boy. Like, this is going to be kind of one of those classic Vandy losses where they play really well and then they just blow it in the fourth quarter. But to their credit, Diego Pavia drove them down the field. They tied it up. They got it to overtime, and they win the game in overtime. That's a huge win for Vanderbilt and for Clark Lee to start the season.
Gigantic. I think it's his biggest win. I understand he has wins over Florida, Kentucky in year two, but the magnitude of wins is just—it's just different now because of where things are after 3 years. And I'm with you. You know, I was at a place very close to Vanderbilt, probably less than a mile away, while many of my family members were at that game. We'll get to that later. But at the exact moment that Virginia, there was a coverage bust for Vanderbilt. What, a 62-yard touchdown for Virginia Tech to go up touchdown. At the exact, I swear, the exact moment, at least, you know, in this place on the TVs, but you would assume it's about the same delay, right? That happened. London Humphreys is crossing the goal line after like a 42-yard TD for Georgia. And it's like, my goodness, What a just a slap in the face of reality for Vanderbilt right there. You give up that TD after the way you played, and now it looks like you're toast. And then, oh, by the way, remember that kid? Because, he's good enough to go make a huge play for Georgia against Clemson in the second half of a game. Also, by the way, at this place, again, we're talking about less than a mile away from Vanderbilt. Guess what game had the sound on?
Tennessee game?
Yes. Yes. The Tennessee game had the sound on. But they fought back. That drive after that, if I'm going to go ahead and just go all hyperbole, biggest win, biggest possession of Clark Lee's tenure was the next possession, and Diego Pavia just took him down the field, and I was like, this kid's actually just going to do this, and he did. And it's a huge win, and it's just wherever it goes from here, like the SEC is still going to be a real – it's tough, and their schedule is still really tough, but – they are fun, and that's the thing. Like, they are an entertaining football team to watch. The changes are good, and I think it's – like, a lot of people have said this for a long time about Vanderbilt. Like, in this league, and, this is obviously a power opponent first game, so it's the same kind of idea. But in this league, if you're Vanderbilt, you probably need to do something different, right? Like, you can't just line up and whatever that is, just schematically on offense. And this is a very fun. I mean, they do a lot of stuff, man. They do a lot of stuff. You mentioned 26 carries. I mean, obviously, it's a lot of option football and RPOs and different motions and movement. I mean, it's a blast. So.
It was a lot of fun to watch. Now, some of those two were, he dropped back to pass and nothing was there and he'd take off. But a lot of them were design running plays for Diego Pavia at the quarterback position. I do wonder, can you really do that all year long in an SEC schedule and have him run that much without getting killed out there? And we'll see. I don't know. But that, it was perfect in that game. And he had ice in his veins, man. He got up in the post-game press conference and was kind of talking about it, too, about how he feels like he's the best player in America and the disrespect that people have shown in his career and all that stuff. Like, it was fun to watch that guy play. And I said it heading into the year, and it's one game. I'm not going to overreact to it, but it's a great start. I said, you have to figure out quarterback this year. They have not been able to come close to figuring out the quarterback position at Vanderbilt. And that, along with a lot of things, a lot of different challenges that Clark Lee's dealt with, but that to me has been the biggest disappointment of his tenure so far, is they've not come close to figuring out quarterback. It's one game. But that was fun to watch from Diego Pavia.
Yeah. Well, their quarterback is a running back who sometimes throws the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I said this last week, but he came out and talked last week at Vanderbilt, the day of the Clark Lee press conference. And so I stood right next to him. He's listed at 6 foot. He's not 6 foot. He's probably about 5'10", and he's built like a running back. And, he's going to take a beating, but I think he's built for that. And, I don't think there's any question. I mean, Clark Lee said this after the game, but I don't think there's any question that attitude that he brings is infectious. That's why he's immediately voted a captain, and he just brings a totally different energy. It's going to be fun just to watch that whole thing. I mean, I don't know if you saw the postgame celebration, but his brother in the locker room, I'm like – I want to party with the Pavias, This looks like a fun group. So, just him alone is it's kind of worth the price of admission. It's going to be really fun to see. And, you're talking about a guy who had no offers and JUCO third stringer.
Yep.
Just like, no, like, and I get it. It's like that kid thinks he's playing quarterback,
right?
But that's going to be fun. But also Vanderbilt, you can see some of the ads on defense. And I like how they played on defense, and maybe Clark Lee coordinating that defense makes a difference. Because Virginia Tech, I actually still think is pretty good. They got punched in the mouth. They're down 17-0, and then their quarterback gets cramps and he can't play at the end. Or it might have been a different outcome, but it's the changes have been good, and were they needed?
They were sorely needed. I thought. The numbers aren't going to jump off the page at you, but Cedric Alexander had a couple of huge, just physical runs where he's lowering the shoulder, trucking people over, and Quincy Skinner made two or three big time catches. Like the one in the end zone, in the corner of the end zone, was a big time catch to get them on the board there. I thought he made some huge plays in the game, And it got a little sideways in the second half defensively, and Clark Lee talked about that in his post-game celebration video to the team in the locker room about how he's got to be better as a D coordinator moving forward in the second half. But, like, first half, you allow 3 points. I mean, that's a heck of a start to the season for them. So, like, if you're a Vanderbilt fan and you've just been kind of worn down and beaten down with what it's been the last couple of years, Saturday had to be a lot of fun for you. Had to be a lot of fun to watch that team go out there, play football. And again, the result is one thing to get the win, but I thought the attitude in which they played with was something that they've lacked over the last couple of years, and you could kind of feel it. And Pavia was kind of the main guy behind that, but you could feel it. It kind of permeated throughout the rest of the roster, I thought.
Yeah, it's Northeast New Mexico State football.
Yeah,
is looking pretty good. No, I agree. They teams are excited for season openers and stuff like that, you know. But a lot of these guys, you know, like Skinner is a good example. He goes 4 for 72. Talented player. He got kind of passed over by some of these other guys who were here the last couple of years, and like the freshman came in last year, but like Junior Sherrill is back, but he's a talented player. You know, the guys who stuck around, who've been through all that stuff, that's got to be, you know, like as great as it is for Clark Lee to have an experience like that, like the players that they retained who are key players now, and they've got guys on both sides of the ball, that had to be one heck of a moment. It's got to feel very different around there right now.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Big win for Vanderbilt to kick off the season against Virginia Tech. Was that Clark Lee's biggest win of his tenure? What did you make of the performance of Diego Pavia at the quarterback position? We'll take your thoughts on all that on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. More on that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Big win for Vandy to begin the season. They take down Virginia Tech 34-27 in overtime, beginning the season 1-0, and opening some eyes a little bit with just how different they looked, especially on the offensive side of the ball. I got a text that says, my opinion, the best game to watch was the Vandy game. I mean, I would certainly put it up there in terms of the games we saw over the weekend. I mean, Notre Dame, Texas A&M is pretty good, even though it was a rock fight at times out there. LSU, USC was pretty good last night.
That might have been the best game last night.
Yeah, it was pretty good. But Vandy, Virginia Tech was up there. I mean, talking about an overtime game, it was pretty good.
You had the college kicker moment.
Yep.
Yeah, overtime and injuries and back and forth. And you had a total, like, same old Vandy as soon as Virginia Tech scored that touchdown. And then, yep. So it was pretty good. Pretty good. And, now can they, what they do, can they come out and just destroy, you know, a lesser opponent and keep things rolling, you know, in that direction?
It's a good question. Week one, there's a lot of fodder to be able to overreact. But I will say, like, I watched them play that game, and if they can stay healthy, it did make me wonder. You know, I think I had them at 3-9 heading into the year. Well, they should grab all of their non-conference games now. Like, if you could beat Virginia Tech, there's no reason for you to lose to Alcorn State or Georgia State or Ball State. Like, I think 4 certainly is attainable now. And I got to say, like, I watched a little bit of our good dear friend Shane Beamer the other day.
Oh, boy.
They're struggling.
They looked rough.
They looked rough. So, like, could you get an SEC game or two and flirt with the 6-win mark? Again, I don't want to overreact to one game in week one. But I did start to think about, like, well, we talked about their schedule. Like, we all know that Vanderbilt beating Missouri or Alabama or Texas or LSU or Tennessee is going to be probably a tough task for them. But, like, South Carolina, could you sneak up and get them? Kentucky, could you sneak up and get them?
I knew you were going to disrespect Kentucky.
I mean, they won 31-0 the other night. So,
How about Auburn? I don't know.
Auburn won by 70 the other day. I don't know how much it means. But, yeah, I mean, could you sneak up and get that?
Like, it makes me think, like, I didn't know what to think about the path heading into the season. And now, like, you could see if they can replicate what they did, they should at least be able to hang in there with some of these teams.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, get to 3-0. I mean, I agree with what you said. If you can beat Virginia Tech, you should be able to, but, you know, we'll see.
I know. I mean,
but, yeah.
College football, crazy stuff happens.
Yes. It should be 3-0 going to Missouri and then, you know, get to Bama. And at least they have, like, they have a somewhat humane schedule compared to Florida's, which at some point we need to talk about the Gators.
Oh, we're going
to. Oh, boy. But at least it's like, I mean, Missouri-Bama, I guess that's rough, but there is an off or idle, either word works, week between those two games, for whatever that's worth. Then you know, you have a little bit of time before Texas. Then you have a little bit of time, and you end up at LSU and Tennessee in the last two games. But you do sprinkle in some possibilities in there. So, yeah, if they could get to November and still have a shot going into those first two November games, Auburn and South Carolina,
yeah,
that's good, you know. And also it's like, I mean, we know that Diego Pavia, this is his 1 year in Nashville to be the star of Nashville, get the key to the city, you know. But like next week, if you blow out Alcorn State, now you can see Nate Johnson play for half because I think he's probably the quarterback next year. Can they kind of? Is there some continuity that they can build with this offense and what they're trying to do? With they're going to have this offense, you have to have a runner, almost a run first quarterback.
Right. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Mike in Gallatin. Mike, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, guys. Good morning. I would be completely lying to you if I told you that this would be the first thing that I think you guys would talk about at 6 o'clock in the morning. But it's encouraging as a Vandy fan who's been through many, many years of suffering to at least have one morning where we can wake up and be encouraged to hear about our football team for a little bit. My question to you guys, and I think that, like, this is a big can of worms that's not going to be answered quickly, but seeing success and having some, you know, positivity injected in there, like, what's it going to take to have more black and gold in that stand compared to all of the other people? Because, again, it was as much as, like, you know, the guys played hard. It was a Virginia Tech home game, and, you know, in the stands. And I just don't know if it's a administration thing, if it's got to be a continual success. I mean, for us, the group of people that we have who have had season tickets in this little section for the last 10 years or so have basically been invaded by other fans for that. We're just used to it at this point. But, I mean, you got to think that, like, it has to be continued success or something like that for it to change around. But anyway, I'm happy to see the boys didn't Vandy. A lot of our friends were texting me like, "Oh, are you watching the game?" It's like, "No, I'm at the game. I'm not going to miss what's going on here." But I was like, "Stop texting me. Vandy could still Vandy," and I'm happy that they didn't.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Appreciate it. I mean, yeah, look, I mean, it was pretty clearly a heavily Virginia Tech dominated crowd. Clark Lee talked about that a little bit after the game, which, quite frankly, I saw some Vandy fans had a problem with. I kind of did too. Like, the reality is the program has not given Vanderbilt fans any reasons whatsoever to show up to this point. Now, that's a great win Saturday. And hopefully that's a win that kind of propels some more Vanderbilt fans to show up and to be there in the building. Now, heading into this, now it's a new season. There's a lot of change. So, yes, you could make the argument that there should have been more Vanderbilt fans in the building. But they haven't really given Vanderbilt fans a reason to be there over the last couple of years. So, well, I saw some Vanderbilt fans that had a problem with Clark Lee basically saying that we got to have more fans in the stands. It wasn't like that today. Like, we didn't have home field advantage today. And he was like, "Well, yeah, we have it because you guys haven't given us any reason to do anything." So, I saw some Vanderbilt fans frustrated after that.
Yeah. Look, it's just how it is. First of all, if you're going to play a team with a power league team with a huge fan base, which is what Virginia Tech is, and your performance has been what it's been, like, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, like, you just have to know that. I mean, there are enough people that are going to be like, "Okay, I can sell my tickets for that, and yeah, all right, I'll do that," and whatever, you know. It's like we talk about Titans fans sometimes. It's like, well, you sell off to the Bills when the one week they come and you pay for most of your season tickets with that or whatever it is, right?
Well, and the bottom line with that, too, is, like, look at their home schedule this year. There's a lot of high-profile teams coming into that stadium this year, which fans have been buying. Like, I've talked to some people that are kind of affiliated with Vanderbilt over there. Ticket sales are going well. Like, there's a lot of people buying tickets over there. They're just – a lot of them are not Vanderbilt fans.
Right. Yeah, like, this was a sellout. So, look, I mean, it changes over time. I mean, look, it changed over time from my perspective. So, like, I'll just go to, like, eight years ago when I got here. The home side was always still Vanderbilt, even – like, even the Tennessee game was like a 50-50 game or close to it the year that, like, Derek Mason beat Butch Jones. That was – I mean, I know Tennessee fans at that point had lost some steam because they lost South Carolina, but still, they were playing for the Sugar Bowl. That was about a 50-50 crowd. The home side always was – they kept that Vanderbilt, the other side, heavily road team, right, when they play SEC teams. And then I think it was the Georgia game – actually, I think it was 2019 – if I'm not mistaken, where I was like, oh, my gosh, look at all the red people sold out on the home side. It just has eroded, and you have year after year of losing, and it's just what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just you got to be realistic about that. So keep doing this, and I think you'll see some results. But like you said, Robbie, you also like when it's Bama and when it's Texas, like that's a lot of people and some people who are going to come to Nashville for the weekend.
Tennessee.
Willing to spend. Yeah, in Tennessee. But I mean, and they, you know, Tennessee fans, of course, live here in droves anyway. But those two fan bases coming in, like those people are going to be willing to spend a lot of money for tickets. And a lot of people are going to be like, oh, okay, I'll sell you for that.
Yeah. Well, that's also, though, why, I mean, you said that this was Clark Lee's biggest win. And I agree. Like, there are some people that probably argue with that and would say, well, they went on the road and Kentucky got an SEC win. They beat Florida at home. I agree with you because it's been so long since he or that program had anything positive go for him. I mean, what's it been? It's been since the Florida game. Even the two wins they had last year, all we were talking about was, man, they look rough in that game against Hawaii. And, man, they look rough the next week for a while. And then they finally figured it out and it got going. And then they lost 10 games in a row. So it's been, you know, a year and a half, almost two calendar years, since they've really had anything positive outside of the construction going on over there to point to on the football field. I thought, for Clark Lee specifically, but really just the program, that's a big positive for them on Saturday that they've just not had very many of in a while.
Yeah. And so I just, like, the product – You give the people a product, you know? And I'll say this, too. Like, first of all, it is very difficult this year. It's going to be very difficult. The construction this year, it's tough, okay? I mean, it's just – I mean, it's not, like, impossible to get to the stadium. But, I mean, it makes it kind of challenging. But the stadium, much better on the inside. I mean, it feels much more like a modern college football stadium. So that's good, too. And then you get to, like, next year when they have the village around the stadium they want it. It's going to be really cool. So you'll get people back out there if you can keep stringing, you know, good performances together.
Nico and Tennessee kick off the season in dominant fashion, albeit against Chattanooga. What do we actually take away from a win like that? We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Monday morning. Taking your thoughts on week one of college football. Big win for Vanderbilt and a large margin of victory for Tennessee on the scoreboard Saturday. 69-3, the final score for the Vols in Neyland Stadium against Chattanooga. Now, look, we talked about this heading into the game. I said it Friday. If things go well for Tennessee, you're probably not learning too much about them on Saturday against the Mocs, and I still believe that that's largely the case. They took care of business. You know, they got the late punt block for a touchdown return from Jackson Ross, which is pretty funny. But I do think, obviously, there's a ton of talk about Nico after the first game. He ended up 22 of 28, 314 yards, three touchdowns. Looked really good. And I think the easy thing to do is say, well, yeah, he played Chattanooga. So what does it really mean? And I largely buy into that. I will say, though, I do think there's something to the ball being exactly where it needs to be placed over and over and over again. And he was darn near perfect in that game. He might have missed one throw in that game against Chattanooga. Other than that, I mean, the ball was exactly where it needed to be pretty much every time. And, Joe, the thing that stood out to me, and, again, it's Chattanooga, so the level of competition is going to go up dramatically here against NC State. But the thing that really stood out to me was how they attacked the passing game over the middle of the field, which we just did not really see at all last year. And I'm not here to pile on Joe Milton, but they just didn't throw the ball over the middle of the field that much last year. And they did it repeatedly in this game. Now, they had some shots on the outside, too. You know, one of the other takeaways is clearly they learned their lesson with Dante Thornton last year, and they're not trying to put him inside anymore. They've moved him back outside. And that seems to be going pretty well. Three catches, 105 yards, two touchdowns for him. But, I thought Nico, for the most part, put the ball exactly where it needed to be all game long. And, again, the quality of competition is going to go up. You're not going to have as clean of pockets as he had in this game for the most part. But the accuracy was pretty evident on Saturday for him.
Yeah, man. I mean, if you watched him just throwing against air, you'd have to be impressed with some of those throws.
Yeah.
Right? Which, I guess he kind of was just throwing against air. But, no, he looked really good. But I think you hit on probably my biggest takeaway from that game is Thornton, because I had to think of, as I'm watching those three catches, 105, two touchdowns, like 59-yarder in particular, it's like, just remember, and I know it was a little different because it was a transition from the staff and all that stuff, but like Jalen Hyatt, they were counting on him so much in that first year of Heupel, and it was all, again, there was some stuff going on with him or whatever. And then year two, he's a superstar taking the top off defenses. Thornton looks like the guy who's going to take the top off defenses. And I think Brazel looked good too, by the way. But Thornton, I think, is that guy. And those deep choice routes, if you have, you know, the guy who can just accelerate and get past somebody and really put a defense in a bind, that makes this offense so much better. So yep. He's my biggest takeaway, but I'm also with you on throwing over the middle. It wasn't a strength for Joe Milton, I think, both in terms of just missing on throws and also in terms of recognizing things at times.
Yeah.
And I don't think they were comfortable with it. So I think some of that was like they were like, let's just keep it to these choice route stuff on the outside. We know he can rope one, you know, on a comeback route from the other side of the field and you're fine, but let's not. Now I think a lot more, the menu is way more open, I think, this year with Nico.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Brazel. He played kind of deep into the game, which I thought was interesting. They left him out there with Gaston Moore. You know, the rotation we've talked a lot about. Like, Squirrel White barely got involved in the game. Like, they were, you know, they found Thornton.
It's like a preseason game for Squirrel White.
It was like a preseason game for Squirrel White. They clearly wanted to get the ball to Brew McCoy early and to get the injury behind him, and they ran a jet sweep to him, which I don't think you're going to see them do a lot with Brew McCoy. But he ended up with six catches, 89 yards. I think they felt like it was important to get him the ball. But I think, you know, if Thornton emerges on the outside there and can become a pretty consistent threat for them, well, that's when you start to look at your wide receiver room and you say, all right, those four guys, Brazel, McCoy, Squirrel White, Thornton, are going to kind of be your bell cow of what the passing attack looks like there. And then, you know, the tight end we talked about heading into this, Ethan Davis, didn't get a lot of work in this game, but he did catch a touchdown right over the middle. Like, that combo of the skill you've got on the outside and then the ability over the middle of the field to utilize the tight end position as well, you got a little bit of a glimpse as to what that could look like. They had a play where they drew Chattanooga off sides, and Nico, like, the linebackers dropped back, and he put it to Holden Stays, like right over the top of the linebacker, right underneath the safety, and Stays couldn't come down with it, but it was just a perfect throw. And you're like, it looks like, even though it's Chattanooga, you with the eye test, you look at it and you say, it's just a little bit different level of quarterback that you're seeing from Nico through one game.
Yes.
At this point.
I would ask Vols fans, and obviously this week, everybody's counting on a 55-point win over NC State.
Yes.
I would ask Vols fans to be excited about Nico and also, like, not care anymore about last year and whether he should have – you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
who cares?
I mean, who cares now?
I mean, yeah, maybe. Maybe at some point last year it would have been smart to go with him, but they went with the plan and, like, you know, I like, that's what a whole offseason is supposed to do for someone, especially being ready to take the beating, because he's going to get hit this
year. That's the thing.
He's going to get hit.
He's put on, I think he was, when he came in, he was at what, 180, 185, and now he's at 215.
Right.
That's why he sat.
Exactly.
He put on some weight.
SEC and, dudes, like, and this offense does put your quarterback in harm's way a little more than some do. And so, yeah. So, who cares?
Hey, he's
move forward.
He's seventh on the Heisman Trophy odds right now. I looked yesterday.
Is that right?
Seventh on the list.
Hey, man.
Plus 1,400. Well,
hey. He looked really good. Like, it's just, I like a text. Not to overreact, but it looks like Nico's winning the Heisman. Tennessee's going 6-0. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yep.
Look, he looks like the real deal. There is just no doubt about it. So, we'll see. This weekend is a big, like, okay, here. This is the weekend where potentially a lot of other people around college football get to know who he is, because it's one of the bigger games. I don't remember what else is at night this week. Well, Colorado-Nebraska is going to get a lot of the attention this week, because just because it's, in, you know, Rayola, the freshman, and obviously Coach Prime.
But I think Nebraska might kill them, but yeah.
They might. But you know, I mean, Tennessee, this is a prime spot for them, and so a lot of people are going to potentially be on that bandwagon. After, like, he's seventh right now. If he goes out and throws for 350 and they roll NC State, NC State's a good team.
Yep.
Then, yeah, then you wait, well, just wait. Just wait.
I looked Saturday heading into it. So Saturday heading into the Chattanooga game, the line for Tennessee-NC State was Tennessee by 4.5. I looked yesterday morning, and it's still the same now. It's already jumped up to 7.5. Tennessee is a 7.5-point favorite.
Man, a three-point
jump swing immediately.
Tennessee by 21.5 by Friday night.
On the defensive side of the ball, Joe, I think that's where I don't know how much you figured out at all about Tennessee on Saturday. Like, Chattanooga, number one, clearly they couldn't block Tennessee up front. So their plan was to get rid of the ball as fast as humanly possible. And I think James Pierce played 10 snaps in this game.
Yeah.
I think it was
a preseason game for him, too.
It was a preseason game for him. They had a rotation where they just kept rotating guys left and right up front in that front seven. You know, Keenan Peely got out there, made some good plays. Arian Carter made a couple plays, but I mean, they were subbing people in and out pretty quickly on the defensive side of the ball in that game, and they only gave up 3 points. And you know, the sack numbers, I think, what they end up with, like one sack. Like, they didn't get a whole lot of sacks.
Ball was out
just
fast.
Because the ball was getting out really fast.
Because you had
from
to.
Chattanooga. So I don't know how much you learned about the Tennessee defense in that game. Going to start to figure out more, I think, of what that looks like and what they actually have on Saturday when they take on NC State, who, by the way, does have a wide receiver that is really, really good that they're going to have to find a way to defend.
Yeah.
A quick test for that secondary. Concepcion, fun name.
No, he was a lot of fun to watch, too, in that not all that impressive game against Western Carolina, but that's a good – and, yeah, look, I mean, they've got a good quarterback – and a good, solid all-around team. So this is a little bit of a psychologically, because they were underwhelming, and the Vols just, you know, it's Nico and it's all this stuff. I mean, psychologically, it doesn't set up terribly for NC State. It just might set up terribly for them in the tangible department.
It might.
They might get their butts kicked. I'm sorry.
It might happen. We'll see.
What do you think? In fact, I think I'm going to call it. I think they're going to get their butts kicked.
What do you think the line ends up being by Saturday? Does it get to like 9.5?
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it creeps close to 10. Yeah.
Oh, boy. I don't know how.
Get ready.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. More college football takeaways, including our friend down in the swamp. It may not go very well for him this year. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Got some tickets to give away to see Weezer at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Tuesday, September 17th. Be caller number 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller 3 will win a pair of tickets to see Weezer at Bridgestone Arena Tuesday, September the 17th. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joe, some more college football headlines from week one, which, by the way, still one more game tonight, Boston College and Florida State. So we'll see how Florida State responds after a disappointing week zero loss. Let's start down in Florida with one of the most intriguing games of the weekend heading into it for me anyway, because you got a Miami team that most people felt like was heavily improved heading into this year with Mario Cristobal, and then everybody's number one coach on the short list of who's going to get fired in Billy Napier at Florida. And our friend Billy Napier did not do anything to really help himself on Saturday. They got destroyed. And I'm not sure the score really even shows how much of a butt-kicking it was. It was 41-17, the final, with Miami walking away, and it was never really in doubt. Like, it was just from the jump, Miami was all over Florida in that game, and Florida never really did anything to make it competitive. And you're talking about we've talked about Florida's schedule. It is potentially the most ridiculous schedule in the history of college football on paper, looking at it. They've got a 7-week stretch kind of starting in October where it's just one after the other of good team, great team, great team, great team. And after that game Saturday, my question is, like, is Billy Napier even going to get to that stretch? Like, is he going to get to the point where he's still the coach at that point in time? Not a good start for the Gators, and not a good start for Billy Napier in terms of drowning out the noise, trying to find a way to keep his job this year. It did not go well for Florida on Saturday.
No, horribly ugly, and they are, they're just bad on defense. They're bad, and you can't – there's no excuse to be that bad on defense. And then you have Graham Mertz just not really getting anything going. I mean, like, the biggest argument at this point – now, look, Florida AD came out and said, I hope he'll be the coach for many, many years and all that stuff. So maybe he doesn't agree with public sentiment that he should be fired. Maybe he's going to
– Was that the vote of confidence?
Well, I mean, the vote of confidence usually comes after a game like this, right? So this was before the game, and it was many, many years. I'm like, okay, he did. That's a little different. That's interesting. I mean, sometimes administrations don't agree with public sentiment. We all want to, we all think a guy should be fired, and he won't be. We'll see. But it's going to be, like, the noise will be overwhelming because they're just going to have a bad year. They're going to get smoked over and over again. They're just not good. DJ Lagway comes in and did some good things, but that's, like, maybe the biggest argument for Napier, right, is, like, he has the next guy. But another thing about that game is that Cam Ward,
yeah,
oh, my goodness, for Miami.
Looks pretty good.
It's, as bad as it was for Florida, I'm looking at Miami and I'm saying, okay, maybe they'll can finally get past the horrific loss of Georgia Tech last year in which the coach just completely doo-dooed himself because – Cam Ward, and I'm watching Cam Ward, and I'm also watching Ohio State struggle early against Kent State with Will Howard at quarterback, because that was supposed to be Ohio State's guy, Akron. Cam Ward. Yeah. All right, thank you.
The Zips. Akron. Don't disrespect the Zips in front of me.
Zips, I'm so sorry, Zips. I apologize, Zips. But Cam Ward, man, oh my goodness. No one watched him the last 2 years. No one watches Washington State.
Yeah.
His numbers are absurd. That guy is – he is something else. I'm very interested to see, like, what kind of movement with the NFL happens with him if he keeps playing like that. Because he made a couple mistakes, but for most part, he was pretty freaking amazing. That team is, I think, right now the best team in the ACC for sure.
Well, we've talked about that stretch for Florida. It starts October 12th against Tennessee. So you're at Tennessee, home against Kentucky, and then it's Georgia, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, Florida State. I mean, it's unbelievable. My question is, what is their record going to be heading into that? Because you've now lost to Miami. I'm sure that they'll take care of Samford coming up this weekend. Texas A&M is after that. I don't know what to make of that one. Like, I didn't think Wegman was very good.
No.
But Notre Dame's defense, I think, has a shot to be pretty legit. So what do you make of that? And then, I say they should beat UCF. But I don't know that they will beat UCF.
It's not a gimme. No.
So what do you do? Like, they got Mississippi State in there too. So what if you're 2-3 heading into the Tennessee game, which I think is entirely possible. Now, I don't know that I would pick it, but I think it's impossible. It's possible that they're 2-3 heading into that game, and then maybe you get one more the rest of the year. Maybe. I mean, I think he's pretty clearly gone at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I hear you. It would make sense. I saw that Matt Barry of ESPN tweeted out, you see this, and he was like, the last Florida coach who got fired went to 3 straight New Year's Six games.
I saw Dan Mullen
retweeted it. Yeah. He's like, yeah, well. It's just, Yeah, I think you could definitely be right. I don't take what the AD said as a complete non-statement, you know. And some of it is like, there are people like, look, if you just keep doing this over and over again, it just keeps getting worse, right?
Right.
But, yeah, they better beat Samford. Really, they need to beat Samford, Texas A&M. They could conceivably be 4-1 going to Knoxville.
They could.
And if that's the case, obviously, he's in much better position. But this game wasn't just a loss to Miami. I mean, this was a game everybody says, boy, they better win if they want to make a bowl game. But this was not just – I mean, not being competitive in this game?
Yeah.
That's very surprising.
At home, too. So, right. I mean, you throw that on top of it, and then you got the Miami players running over to the Florida recruits after the game. Like, don't come here. Come to Miami. It's pretty funny. Georgia beats the tar out of Clemson in the second half. It was actually a pretty good game for the first half. Not a lot going on offensively. And then the doors get blown open in the second half. 34-3, the final. And it kind of brings up the same old questions about Dabo. Now, I saw this point made over the weekend, too. Like, we could talk about the transfer portal and all that stuff. I mean, Georgia out-recruits the heck out of Clemson anyway. So there's the high school part of it. It was just there's a clear talent gap between Clemson and Georgia. But not great for Dabo when this game is not even competitive in the second half for it to be 34-3. I think it's tied for the fewest amount of points they've ever scored under him in a game. And it just kind of feels like it could be more of the same of what we've seen the last couple of years for Clemson. If that game against Georgia is any sort of barometer. Number one, Georgia looked really good in the second half. And that interception was unbelievable. Really good
Malachi
stuff.
Malachi Starks first rounder.
Unbelievable. But what did you make of just the dominance of Georgia against Clemson?
Well, Clemson's right there in the first half, and they have opportunities. They squander them. It's 6-0. Clemson has a lot of talent still. They got a lot of talent on defense, a very good defense. And the defense just finally broke in the second half because the offense betrayed the defense. And then Carson Beck got rolling, and it's like, okay, now you see with him why people are so enamored with him.
Yeah.
And some of the throws he made. And, of course, Georgia didn't even have Trevor Etienne, former Gator. And seriously, like, what a slap in the face, but by the way, you're Florida. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, the guy just left us for rival Georgia. Awesome. Yeah. So when they get him going, I think Georgia's going to be the best team. I think they're an absolute wagon in the making. So they got some huge games on the road that are going to be a lot of fun this year. The thing about Clemson is, the portal stuff is absolutely fair with Dabo for sure, right? I mean, you have to be more open to it than he is. It was like Clemson, Army, Navy, and Air Force are the only four teams that didn't game in the portal.
Yeah.
But the biggest story with Clemson is they had Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence, and then they had two quarterbacks with similar, if not better, recruiting profiles. Not than Lawrence, but then Watson in DJ Uyangale and now Cade Klubnik. And it's two straight whiffs.
Yeah.
And Klubnik is just not that good.
He's not very good.
He's a 5-star top of the class guy that he's just not that guy. And you can blame the OC some too and stuff like that, but their passing game is anemic. I mean, they're just like all these ACC teams, there's a lot of disappointment this weekend. I mean, they're all in the same league with each other. So
yeah, maybe
maybe Miami will just absolutely destroy everybody, but you know, they all are still in there for the ACC and the playoff and all that stuff, but not a good start for Dabo.
Joe, real quickly, Notre Dame takes down Texas A&M on the road and USC with the win last night against LSU in Vegas. What did you make of those two games?
Yeah, Notre Dame's defense is awesome. I'm still not in love with the offense with Riley Leonard, but he's a really good runner, and he made some key passes. Connor Wegman's another one of those guys, another 5-star guy. I mean, that's the thing. There's a lot of 5-star guys, and a lot of them don't turn out to be 5-star quarterbacks. And it's early. He only played 4 games last year, but that was not – I mean,
he missed a lot of throws.
Well, those two picks are just like total just, I mean, bad misses, and like that's the game. So – I like Notre Dame. I don't love Notre Dame, but they're probably going to host a playoff game. Get ready for that. And because they're going to be the 5 seed, that's the highest that they can be. And last night's game I thought was a great game. That was, I think, as fun a game as there was to watch. It's amazing. Both of those teams can tackle now. They have new D coordinators. They look like they have a clue. I actually feel better about LSU than I did going into the weekend because I think Garrett Nussmeier is going to be really good. I like him a lot. They're going to be fine. It's just they're going to be fine, but they're in the SEC.
Right.
Was that Kyron Hudson? A little bit overrated.
Was that Kyron Hudson catch the best catch you've ever seen? It's up there. That was a pretty damn good catch.
Like, seriously, the Odell Beckham catch from 10 years ago or whatever, I think it was better than that catch.
It was. There were two guys on him.
Yeah. In the middle of double. But also, like, the pick from Robert Morris this weekend. Yeah. I tweeted this last night. Like, which was better? Like, D-guy pick one hand and flips around. Yeah. Like, no, but as a receiver catch, it's catch of the year. Nothing will beat it right now.
It's going to be hard to top that one. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We will get back into reaction to week one of college football a little bit later in the program. It is week one of the NFL. We have arrived to week one of the National Football League. We'll get into that. And how big a game this is for the Titans. Is this the most anticipated season opener? Let me ask it this way. Is this – at what point – when is the last time, if I could talk today – that we had a season opener as highly anticipated as this one? We'll get your thoughts on that. 615.
I like that question.
Once I finally got it out, it was a pretty good question. 615-737-1025, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.